stand to wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." We as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening Media is there, always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. And check out the Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things being placed in the marketplace that you can check out. African language classes on education, on economics, or social systems, on health, and many, many more taught by professors on the continent and in the diaspora. So check it out. Make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're scheduled to have a special guest join us, activist and organizer and Coburg Youth Co-Chair and Executive Director of Racial Justice Now, Brother Hashim Ali Jabbar is scheduled to be with us to kind of give a recap on the NCOBRA Youth Reparations Summit that was held on October 4th and 5th. It's an online summit, and we're going to get a brief overview of things that went on and kick around some relevant topics with our special guest this evening, activist and organizer and NCOBRA Youth Co-Chair and Executive Director of Racial Justice Now, Brother Hashim Ali Jabbar. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors. And when we come back, also, I got a couple community announcements, if I can find them. If I don't do it when we come back to start the program, I'll do it at the top of the hour, 8 o'clock hour. But either way, you'll hear the community announcements that we have tonight. And we'll be right back after a brief word from our sponsor.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia. At 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. It's been a slow Sunday, and you know, eventful weekend as it usually go. I was able to go down to the DEOP conference that was here in Philadelphia. And they had a large contingent of Brazilian scholars from Bahia, you know, presenting on from their perspective of dance at the African Center perspective. Where they couldn't speak English. So I think it was five of them, and dealing with the same kind of subject matters as far as identifying and dealing with white hegemony. But it was interesting. And then went up to North Philadelphia Peace Park, and they had their fall harvest day yesterday.
Okay.
So after that wore me out, Ellie. I couldn't do nothing but slow walk the day.
The DEOP conference ended today, didn't it?
Yeah, yesterday. Yesterday. It was okay. Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, I haven't talked to Dr. Sante in quite a while. You know, about 8 years ago, he introduced me to some students out of Columbia when he traveled down there and started a Sante Institute down there.
Mm-hmm.
And that brother has been in contact with me ever since. He's came here to the States a few times for the DEOP conference. He might have been here this time because he usually gets in contact with me when he comes. But he's been in touch with me ever since, letting me know things that's going on down in Columbia in relation to the black students, because he was in the university down there at the time. I'm quite sure he's graduated since then, but he's still active. So, you know, I tip my hat to Dr. Sante because he's moving around, and everywhere he goes in the diaspora, on the continent, he's establishing some type of institutions, and that's really important. We might get around to talking about that, some of that with our special guest this evening too, about the establishing of institutions. That's vital to our existence moving forward. Tonight, Richard, this is a continuation of some of the things we've been discussing, and I'm glad to have our special guest with us this evening. It was a online summit that was held on October 4th and 5th. 2019. The title of it was The Role of Youth and Young Adults in the Reparations Movement. It was hosted by the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America, which is in COBRA. And it was featuring black student union presidents, HBCU student presidents, and speakers was involved, and hosted by the COBRA Youth Commission. The chair of the whole thing was our special guest this evening, activist and organizer in COBRA Youth, co-chair and executive director of Racial Justice Now. Brother Hashim Ali Jabbar is with us. Brother Jabbar, are you there?
Peace and blessings. I'm here. Thank you for having me on.
How are you, sir?
Oh, man, I'm thankful for another day. Still fighting a good fight, and it's a blessed opportunity to be able to talk with you.
I'm glad to have you on Time for Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
Yeah, how you doing, brother?
Peace, Brother Richard.
All right, now.
Hey, Brother Jabbar, before you give us an overview of some of the things happening with our youth that were involved in some of the in COBRA Youth chapters, talk about the genesis of the online summit that happened, because from what I was reading the synopsis. And you had black students involved both here on the continent and in the diaspora. That was basically a worldwide conference. Give us an overview of some of the things that happened and talk about what led up to it first. That's what I really want to kind of get a little grasp on, because a lot of these youth are active. They're very active. We've had some black student presidents on our program on various occasions. Talking about things that's going on in college campuses and what they're doing on the campuses, especially after some of this environment has started since this Trump presidency. A lot of crazy stuff has been going on some of these college campuses, and we've had some of the black student presidents on at various times. But talk about some of the things that led up to the conference and the conference itself.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Brother Elliot. Yeah, the in COBRA 30th convention was this summer, I believe July of this past summer. And then we began planning. It was the first opportunity for the NCOBRA Youth Commission and youth from all over the nation to come together on a face-to-face opportunity to meet each other, shake hands, you know, give the greetings and break bread and really have some dialogue about some of the things that they are, you know, wanting to know, some of the information that they are sharing from their point of view. And it's really a revival of the NCOBRA Youth Commission of old. And so NCOBRA is a beautiful organization because it stands on a very strong cultural basis, you know. And when I say culture, I'll reflect our, you know, ancient rites of passage programs where we have, you know, the development of a child under the guidance of elders. And then that child goes to through stages in life and becomes a warrior, you know, and then that warrior goes through stages and becomes a nation builder, and that nation builder goes through stages and becomes an elder, and that elder becomes, you know, an ancestor eventually. But at each stage, we all have our role to play. And so it's been a beautiful thing to experience the role of the elders of NCOBRA that maintain a certain cultural standing, which is very refreshing by comparison to what others might consider the, you know, 501(c)(3) see industry, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
And so every commission, the youth commission, for example, has a co-chair. And so it has the Mayotte balance, you know, that male and female energy balance. And so shout out to Sister Yomi, who is the co-chair of the NCOBRA Youth Commission, the female, and I'm the male. And so Imari Obadeli, a strong freedom fighter from the Republic of New Africa, who was later a professor at Prairie View University, was really the strong standard bearer for the NCOBRA Youth Commission, was very actively engaged with young people, always bringing them around, keeping them informed on reparations, helping them organize, you know, throughout the college systems, keeping reparations on the campus. And he even had the young people working on a magazine across the nation for reparations. And he transitioned, and that caused the Youth Commission to be dormant, you know, for a short period of time.
Okay.
And so I just want to make sure we give that Sankofa moment, that go back and fetch it, or go back and look at the history so that we can see how it is that we got to where we are today. And it's important to know that, you know, NCOBRA has been pushing for H.R. 40 for an extended period of time, going on 30 years. And this is the first time ever that a House bill has been in the House and the Senate at the same time. Sheila Jackson picking up the work of her previous representative.
John Conyers.
Pushing
You're talking about Conyers. John Conyers.
Yes, John Conyers. Thank you. And continue that work. And then Senator Booker pushing S 1028, I believe it is, in the Senate. And so NCOBRA's in a very strong position, unlike ever before. We know reparations is getting more talk than it ever has before. And so it was the, you know, Youth Commission to come together at the 30th convention and really begin to express their thoughts around reparations and what they wanted to see happen. And we know that we are living in a very digital age, as we are, you know, broadcasting or podcasting online. And so they wanted to see a summit come together online. And so that's how, you know, you might say bring us up to current date, to how we got to having an online summit.
Okay. I see some of the things that was talked about in the summit. The youth discussed some NCOBRA action plans around moving forward with the divestment and holding institutions accountable for profiting from slavery. Talk about that, because the author of the book Ebony and Ivory, and his name, I think it's Professor Wilder, I think his name is, he was supposed to be on quite a while ago, but he was on hiatus and doing some other work. But through his work, he uncovered quite a few of these campuses, both large and small, well-known and some obscure, that have benefited from our ancestors being enslaved. Talk about some of the plans that some of the youth had in reference to some of the things that they want to do.
Excellent. And so at this point, we are working hard to revive our NCOBRA on campus clubs and organizations or student organizations. And so that's really a strong first step to get our numbers and student advisors or faculty, staff advisors, and going through the process with the college to get these student organizations back operating, effectively on the campus. And so that's really, our first link in the chain to getting that specific work done. But around the conversation with the divestment plan, RE Moretazon is a strong chapter in Philly for NCOBRA, and he has outlined very well a divestment plan against three specific areas: the college and universities that benefited, the churches and institutions that benefited, and then also these banking and financial institutions that benefited. And he has outlined in this short document a process of divesting from these individuals. And that plan has worked in the past, and it's been utilized, internationally. And that's another strong point around, NCOBRA's work being what one would consider pan-African, or supporting, the international work of reparations and being in solidarity across the globe, has allowed NCOBRA to benefit from knowledge of understanding and camaraderie and the sharing of information of those that are doing the work and that are winning. And so we're taking those winning notes and bringing them home. And so that divestment plan is certainly a plan that does work, and we are looking to push those forward. That's, again, around those specific areas, those colleges and universities that benefited, the churches, specifically Jesuits, that benefited, and as well as the banking institutions or financial institutions that benefited.
Brother Jabbar, the NCOBRA youth chapters, most of them are located in the southern area of this country. What state has the most active youth chapters?
Currently, Alabama is leading the pack with the groups that are re-signing, going through the process of, again, officially being on the roll at a university. But Alabama is leading the way, and Texas is right next to them, also in Georgia.
Okay. Mississippi, how far are they behind? I'm just curious.
There were some students on from Mississippi.
Okay.
But I say Alabama is certainly leading the way.
Okay, good, good.
Yeah.
Brother Richard.
Brother Jabbar, as you said, well, it's a couple of questions, I guess, but following up on the, when I say youth, young men and women that are involved in the youth chapters, are there primarily college students?
Yes.
And in the discussion, did any discussion, and I'm thinking about school days, right? Maybe I shouldn't, but did any of the discussion around reparation from the youth chapter get in, was it primarily around the black study unions of the different colleges and trying to expand the understanding within those, or was it a combination of black studies unions of colleges and the community, youth communities that the colleges, the youth surround or is in the center of?
It seems kind of like everybody is, everybody has their own story, you might say, So on some campuses, you're working with a fraternity member that brings it to some of the brotherhood in his fraternity. And then on another campus, a mother has a daughter in school. So she calls her and gets her, stoked and fired up about it. And she talks to members in her BSU. And sometimes it's the BSU president or the other BSU staff or officers that get involved. So, you know, everybody has their own story about how it's coming about, and we're just kind of rolling with the, you might say, the organic approach, again, right, going through that college process and dialoguing with the school officials to get the NCOBRA commission working officially on the campus.
And how did that dialogue, as far as with the school officials, has that gone in any of the colleges that you mentioned? Have they been saying that there is somewhat resistance, or what's that, lukewarm support, as they reach out in their sphere of influence?
Well, I think you can use that approach, a lukewarm approach, but also that these are, you know, some very busy individuals with a lot on their plate, so that sometimes those offices can be kind of hard to navigate, to make sure that you're getting on people's calendars and things of that nature. But everybody's been receptive. You know, we haven't had anybody slam any doors in our face, but it's, you know, it's always working within a certain kind of bureaucracy one way or another. You know, you got to go hop through some hoops and get some paper signed and things of that nature.
And what's the sense or tenor as far as youth in general, you know, whether it be specifically, you know, y'all discussion, what are y'all's sense of youth awareness of reparations and their response? Have y'all had any dialogue of, you know, the feel of that from various experiences on the campuses that you're operating on?
And so, yeah, there's a lot of dialogue about what reparations should be. And, of course, everybody has certain feelings, has their own personal feelings about what they should look like. But what's important is the principle of NCOBRA is full repair, and what mm-hmm. full repair looks like. And so we want to make sure that it's not just a one-time check or something of that nature. But, you know, these 400 years, it's going to take us a while to unravel all that was done. And so we want to drive home to the students, you know, the concept of full repair and what does that look like to you, and how would you articulate, you know, what full repair looks like. And so that's really the messaging that we're delivering and making sure we're expanding on that with our students.
Is the student bodies from the, you know, the members who of the commission that was engaged in the conference, have they expressed that the student bodies on the campuses that they're at are kind of in tune to reparations, or is it something that, like, where y'all feel like it's still a broader campaign needed in order to make people aware that reparations is an issue that they should be aware of? Is there already a sense of reparations amongst the student bodies in general?
No, it seems like it's in pockets. It seems like it's happening in pockets. We're getting, you know, lukewarm, as you said, responses in some instances, but some others are much more educated and tuned in politically. I think this presidential campaign that we've experienced, you know, has young people a little more politically tuned in than maybe more than the past. And so it seems like we're getting a lot of feedback. But then at the same time, there is a lot of information that needs to be delivered. You know, there's like, again, a lot of ideas about what reparations are and what that actually looks like in a tangible form.
Yeah, Brother Jabbar, you mentioned politics, and you and Richard just talked about that, and that's one of my questions, because we did some political seminars here or political awareness around independent Black parties, and one of them in particular that is started here in Pennsylvania, and we had a panel of both old and young people in the community, activists, and it seems as though it kind of, and I, listen, you deal with the youth in both in NCOBRA and in the community and where you're located in Ohio. So you see that a lot of our youth are turned off by dealing with politics, and especially as it is functioning in this country. It's a strong need to have, to me, and this is my opinion, I'd like yours, I think it's a strong need to make our children aware that they have to become involved in controlling the politics of our communities, but they don't have to be involved in this type of Democratic Republican shenanigans that we see now. We can be involved in politics in our communities without getting our hands dirty, so to speak, with this type of foolishness that we see. I think it's important to expose our young people to independent black parties, proportional representation, especially in communities where we have the dominant population, so we can get a fair share of these tax dollars and tax monies that are generated in our communities that go outside of our communities. How are they feeling in relation to politics? Because I know that you had some politicians that came on the virtual summit. We'll talk about them a little bit later, but just get a gauge, give our listening audience a gauge, and myself and Brother Richard, how some of our young people was feeling in reference to politics.
That's not a deep subject that young people are really tuned in on. Again, you know, you're gonna know who your president is, right? Mm-hmm. And you're not gonna know who the vice president is, or about Congress, or about Senate, or anything of that nature, you know. But you do hear about who this man has been tweeting against and things like that, you know. But a lot of young people, man, are really not that tuned in, you know, in that regard politically. And that's why I thought it was very important to have to review some of that SNCC history, going back to that Sankofa moment, you know, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee.
Okay.
And and our brother Mukasa Dada on from SNCC. And so, young people are really not informed. And so, yeah, there's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of mistrust of the system. And I completely agree with you about the independent party. And I'm going to tell you the challenge. And this is where we need black business, and we need independent, you know, media like you're broadcasting through. And so a great young man that ambitious, you know, junior college. I see him, you know, popping up everywhere, this conference, that conference, you know. But how does he move his career forward? You know, how does he put some food on the table to, you know, become a political strategist or what have you? You know, he's got to find his way. And it often happens where he gets drafted by the Democratic Party, not too often from the Republican Party, but that happens too. Like the young misinformed young brother that testified at the hearing. I think his family was Puerto Rican, but he actually testified against reparations, you know, like I said, being miseducated. But again, so when you are, you know, there's money involved. Politics is money. And so how do these independent parties, you know, find a way to create a system that is economically sustainable and provide opportunities for our young people? You know, our young people have seen what the struggle produces. and oftentimes there's been more struggle, right? And so it's a challenge, you know, we have to find balance, and we have to find those economic systems of trade and commerce that feed into our independent political ideologies. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be very challenging to meet the needs of our young people. We have to remember, man, that these young people are the victims of integration. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
They are straight up the victims of the product that said, Martin Luther King said, I don't want to be your brother-in-law. I want to be your brother. You know, so these young men, they don't have any jobs to go to. They got to go ask their opponent for a job. You know what I mean? They don't have any family businesses in their communities where auntie runs this, or uncle such and such runs that, or neighbor runs this, and they can get some economic benefits from it. That's not happening, you know. So these children are really the victims of also the Ronald Reagan cocaine epidemic, you know, where they destroyed our families, our houses, you know, single family homes, fathers locked up, fathers murdered, mothers murdered, you know, fathers on drugs, mothers on drugs, grannies raising them, you know what I'm saying, raising by the street, orphanages. All of that's the generation we're talking about today. You know what I mean? They're the products of that. And so we had to put all those factors. People lose sight of that cocaine epidemic, man. People lose sight of that and the results that brought.
I know,
you know,
yeah.
So when you talk about young people, man, that's real. That's real. I'm 41 years young. And so I grew up in the 80s when Ronald Reagan was the president. And so and Bush was his vice president. you know, these both criminals putting, you know, drugs in our neighborhoods, you know, Oliver North putting drugs in our neighborhoods, you know what I mean? And so we can't lose sight when we talk about young people of those effects. So when we talk about full repair, nah, a check ain't going to do it. A check not going to do it. You know what I mean? When we talk about full repair, we got some shit to deal with. Excuse my French.
You know, and that's why, and Richard, you could jump in. That's why I think it's important that, and I heard you mention it twice when you talked about our elder that passed, Omari Obadeli, and the brother from SNCC, to give our children a historic overview of our people fighting. Because you pointed out the attacks that have been lodged against our community as a whole. But some of our young people are not aware that our people have been fighting for a number of years, and you've had fighters out here. So I'm glad that you gave some of the young people an historic overview, and some of the young people that attended the NCOBRA conference, to see some of the elders that have been there fighting on this front for a number of years, that they know that they're not out there by themselves, that they know that they don't have to reinvent the wheel, that they know that there's somebody out there that's been trying to look out for their back. It's important. And I'm glad that we're on the same page, that we have to make these young people aware of the historic battle that our people have been in around this issue and others.
And so we really need a systemic revival of the freedom schools, you know what I'm saying? The freedom rides, you know, we need that spirit very badly. This fight is, you know, we've turned into a very materialistic, consumerism, individual society, you know, and, but we still recognize the police brutality. You know, we still recognize the injustice in the judicial system, in the economic system, in the education system. And so when we talk about what these young people don't know about the history, that's intentional. You know, these criminals went to study. Our education system came about by studying Hitler's regime. You know, Horace Mann, this the first PhDs in America that came back to America. They went over to study what was called Prussia, and which is Germany. And they were so impressed with Hitler's ability to be able to control the masses of the people just based on his word. And so that's what they studied. That's what they received their PhDs in. And that's what they came back to America to bring as a public education system. And that's what we live under today, when a bell rings and, you know, 1,000 people stand up and walk out of a room and get in a straight line. that's where all that came from. And so, like Dr. Carter G. Woodson said, we've been intentionally miseducated. You know, we've been intentionally given the inferiority complex, and certain people are left out of history for particular reasons. And so, again, we really need that spirit of Saturday schools. We really need that spirit of freedom schools. We really need that spirit of, you know, the freedom rides and the summer service projects, teaching each other to read and things of that nature. And so we had to have to revisit SNCC. I grew up in D.C. Shout out to my mayor for life, Marion Barry. He came out of SNCC leadership, man. I mean, H. Rap Brown, the, what's his, Jameel Alameen,
mm-hmm.
You know, Fannie Lou Hamer. I mean, so my mother went to, what's the school in North Carolina? Shaw University.
Okay.
You know, and so the history, you know, we have to, yeah, like you said, we do have people that have fought and laid down and struggled. And so, and a part of that is how we teach our young people. See, we can't teach them like we taught, like Horace Mann teach you. Everybody sit down and listen. That's not our culture. That's not how we, you know, engage our people. So we have to learn about learning styles and how to deliver this information. Even our teachers are miseducated. And so we really need a new education system. And, yeah, these young people are the victims, again, of what I say is victims of integration.
So with that said, the conversation come up about and thinking, building on the point about freedom schools and the political education, in the chapter, the youth chapter, to have political education as a vehicle to be able to get that understanding those strategies and tactics that were that came out of SNCC and other areas. Was that an agenda item that to put in play as far as for the Youth Commission chapters, Political Education Committee?
Yeah, certainly it is. And the way that we were been dialoguing about doing it is through a movie night. It's just having these movie nights where we can all come together and over some popcorn or some sodas or some candy or what have you, and watch, Rosewood. And then, you know, stop it in the middle and have some dialogue about this history and culture that we're learning. And then we sit in circle and dialogue, you know, and to answer questions and to engage the culture and continue with the movies. Like, of course, we certainly like entertainment. We're certainly, you know, into these smartphones and digital media and things of that nature. So we definitely have to create atmosphere and settings where the learning can be, you know, engaging and fun.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Richard.
Go ahead. I was just thinking, and as far as that was one element to introduce movie nights, and I'm looking at the campuses or the states that you mentioned where the commission is. There other tools that came up out of the discussion, the conference, and I understand for the 2 days that would be considered tactics that could be shared as far as what the thinking is that. Not only because that ideal of movie nights is not only something that we can done on a college campus, it's something that we can do in relationship to pushing reparations in the community for community organizers.
Yeah.
So is there other things that came out of the youth commission discussion conference that you see that could be used on college campuses and at the same time be used in the community in general?
The other thing that we really have to drive home is this legislative process. And so the Youth Commission, has to work with the other commissions in COBRA. And Queen Mother Mashariki, our co-chair, female co-chair, she always drives home the point that the real work is done in the commissions. And so the legislative commission is leading the way of the H.R. 40 and I think it's 1028. And we need more co-sponsors. And so to educate inside of some work, right? Mm-hmm. So educate on some phone calls that need to be made, educate on sending an email that need to be sent out, or drafting a letter, asking, your congressman, your state representative, and things of that nature. So I really appreciate SNCC again, that example of some work, man. Everybody want to be an organizer on Twitter. That's excellent. That's good to tweet at somebody, But at the end of the day, we have to do some WORK that's going to move the process, the governmental process that we're under. And so that political education has to be a certain reality to it, a tangible movement. So we have to go to Capitol Hill and we have to talk to some people and knock on some doors and to educate them about H.R. 40. And so we have to educate ourselves about H.R. 40. And so those are some of the tangible political education things that we have to do, but we have to do some work to make sure that we are pushing forward the necessary agenda items to understand, this political governmental process, because it certainly is a process. People say, and Kobe, y'all been around for 30 years and you ain't done this and you ain't done that. And I say, you ignorant to governmental process. We know we got an enemy that's against us in general, but time is not always with us either. This is a process that takes time and that takes cycles, and you have to be a part of each step of the process to get it done effectively.
Yeah, Brother Jabbar, you just mentioned about the enemy that's been fighting this. When we look at our experience here, even up until the last presidential election, candidates on, well, I'm not even talking about the Republicans because they're not talking about this, but the Democrats that were supposed to be black folks' friends over the years never wanted to talk about reparations. None of your popular candidates, the Hillary Clinton at the time, Sanders, several of them, when they were running against Trump the first time, reparations was off the table. Now we see that during this Trump reign, that all of a sudden, reparations is on the minds of Europeans. It's always been in the forefront of the minds of black folks and our ancestors. It's been a struggle almost since we arrived here in this country. But all of a sudden now it's on the lips and minds of Europeans. Black folks that have been conscious out here, that raises antennas. So I think that we have to be smarter when we're dealing with these people, knowing that is something in mind that they have. They want to get out in front. They know that this is a train moving down the tracks, but Europeans always want to get out in front of an issue to try to steer the conversation and steer the issue. So we just have to make sure that we steer the issue and that our young people are aware. And by you and others giving them that historic overview, they know exactly who they're dealing with. Because when you mentioned about this integration being a failed experiment, a lot of our people are not aware of that. And I'm not talking about young people. I'm talking about people that are older than me and you. They don't realize this.
Hey.
They don't. I mean, you know it. They don't.
Yeah.
So I just think that that we have to be cautious when we're dealing with these folks that have been historically against any progress our people have been making in this, or trying to make in this country. So, but then now all of a sudden they're black folks' friend and they're signing on. I mean, for years, for over 30 years, you had maybe 20 people, 25 people, almost the same group that had signed H.R. 40. But I think over the past year and a half, if I'm not mistaken, Richard, I remember when we had Cam Howard on about 8 months ago, it was 30. You remember when it was like 30 folks, Richard?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
all of a sudden, boom, it went over 100. And then they got some signatures with the Senate companion bill. So, listen, I think all of that is good because we can utilize that. But I just think that we have to be cautious. And I know that you and others know this.
No, you certainly are right. You know, we can never sleep on that enemy of J. Edgar Hoover and his COINTEL program, military style sabotage, military style intelligence gathering, military style infiltration methods. We certainly have a strong opponent. But as we, you know, had our initial talks, Brother Elliot, you know, I said I always have to approach life and these situations with a spiritual eye.
Okay.
You know, that is our weaponry that the U.S. Defense Department can't do nothing with. You know what I'm saying? It's called melanin, right? And so we have to look with a spiritual eye. And we can't deny the fact now that, you know, that biblical prophecy of 400 years, you know, that that this stranger, that these strange people would be in a strange land for over 400 years, this Abrahamic prophecy, you know, whether we like the Bible or disagree with it or not, you know, it's there, right? And there's a people that have said that those are that they are that people, but can never really prove that 400 years. However, you know, again, we are here and we've been here over 400 years, but there is a celebration this year or a commemoration of that boat that came into Jamestown. And so there's been a lot of increased, you might say, messaging or propaganda or knowledge around our plight as they continue to murder us and get off scot-free, as they continue to choke us out on TV and get us scot-free, as they continue to attack our women, you know, and to imprison us falsely in all of these factors. But you can't sleep on it. It's just our time. You know what I mean? We're benefiting greatly from social media, from information, being able to travel at the speed of light, at rapid speed. You know, before we, a few years ago, we had to wait on mail 3 and 7 days to get some information. Now we can send an email that gets something there in a matter of seconds. And so we're traveling at a much faster speed as a modern technological society. And again, it's just our time. You know, we are a powerful people, brilliantly creative, and we're watching really the unfolding of America. We're looking at this president now that is embarrassing the hell out of America.
Yeah.
You know, Bill Clinton, you know, embarrassed America, but this president is taking it to a whole nother level. But what's really interesting is that he has such a great desire to be a monarch, to be a king, you know, and it's very clear. And so all of these factors are this big gumbo, you know, of ready to pop, because we're bracing for World War III. You know, let me be very clear on that, if anybody's not clear, back to our spiritual eye. But we're bracing for World War III. And but everybody is seeing this change of worlds. And everybody knows that the original people, the original black people are due. And so as reparations has been on in Cobra's lips, and they've held that flag up of H.R. 40, then that opportunity was there. And Sheila Jackson picked up on it. And the social media took it and ran with it. And again, we're traveling, you know, at the speed of light. And everybody knows, man, we haven't received that justice, you know. And so it's like a pregnant woman getting into that ninth month, you know. Nobody wanted to talk about it before she was wearing baggy clothes. Nobody wanted to talk about her being pregnant, you know. Everybody just wanted to overlook, well, hey, it's 9 months. Something about to happen, you know. Yeah, you're going to feel some pains. And people are going to talk about it a little more. So it's just our time, you know.
I understand. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation. I want to spin off and talk a little bit about Racial Justice Now, the organization that you're the executive director of, because I think that ties into the whole conversation of what we're talking about in Cobra, our past, some of our ancestors. All of this ties in. It's all related.
Wonderful.
You can get involved in the conversation, too, with our guest, activist and organizer and Cobra Youth Co-Chair and Executive Director of Racial Justice Now, Brother Hashim Ali Jabbar is with us. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
Preachers and leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you are the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. You can't feel it? When you talk to young people, you can't feel that you're missing them? Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk? Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wine, or your day of leading our people is over, and it will never come back to you again.
Damn it, we're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party. Still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
Put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. The When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years. And they're all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last. Because you're a chump. A political chump.
So you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise. Any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here, you love this nation. You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect.
When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America, that's in the Bible, for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating her citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's Sunday evening here in the city of Philadelphia. It's 8:09, and we're in conversation this evening with activist and organizer and COBRA Youth Co-Chair and Executive Director of Racial Justice Now, Brother Hashim Ali Jabbar is with us in conversation. You can get involved, too, in that conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. I do have a community announcement that I wanted to read. It was sent over to me by Sister Empress Filet, who organized a Million Women March here in Philadelphia, a historic Million Women March here in Philadelphia over 25 years ago, I think it was, Richard.
Oh, yeah.
Mark your calendars on Sunday, October 20th, 2019 at 6 p.m. Join us for the official officiation of the Million Women March Philly, Black Community Queens, and Special Warrior Sister Salute to the Black community, and welcome home to Sister Debbie, Jeanette, and Janine Africa. This event will take place at the Calabash Restaurant located at 6208 Lancaster Avenue in Philly, 19131. Guest speakers, surprise guests, entertainment, poetry, martial arts and self-defense demonstrations, and a lot going on, a lot more. Advanced tickets are $55 per person, $100 per couple. Add $10 if it's done after October the 13th, which is today. And tickets are on sale now. You can contact some of the honorees that is listed here beside Sister Debbie, Sister Janine, and Sister Janet Africa. You're going to have some of the other honorees will be Sister Ramona Africa, Mama Sonia Sanchez, Eleanor Jean Henley, Trudy Haynes, Mama D, Mama Richardson, and there will also be honorable mention to some of the ancestral queens who served the black community over the years and are now ancestors. So again, the tickets are $55 per person, $100 per couple, and you can use PayPal or send your funds to Cash App or email them at nbhrproject. That's nbhrproject@gmail.com. It's group sales. Tables are available. Also, gift certificates that will go to the sisters in shelters. So, give them a call. It's a special event going on here in the city of Philadelphia on October the 20th, 2019 at 6 p.m. Let's go back to our guest, Brother Jabbar, and I know he's still with us. Brother Jabbar?
Yes, sir.
Let's transition over to talk about the organization that you're also the executive director of, Racial Justice Now. Let me read a title and some of the synopsis of the West Dayton Youth Task Force. I think that's a part of the organization also. Racial Justice Now is committed to dismantling structural and institutional anti-black racism in all areas of people and activity. Our primary focus is on the institution of education and lifting up the voices of disempowered black parents and children. We are dedicated to stopping the school-to-prison pipeline and focus specifically on holding institutions accountable to equitable distribution of resources and services to black people in Dayton and around the state of Ohio. The West Dayton Youth Task Force, West Dayton Youth Task Force, is a youth organizing and programming division of the Racial Justice Now Dayton chapter. The mission of the West Dayton Youth Task Force is to initiate programs for youth of all ages that will instill in them the core values of the Nguza Saba, the seven principles, to foster character development that will produce a future generation of capable of building a community and a society of their own. This will be accomplished by means of study, social and cultural activities, academic and career development activities, as well as involvement in community work. Brother Jabbar, talk about the organization, Racial Justice Now, your involvement. Is it something that you took over? Is it something that you put forth? Talk about the organization itself.
Wonderful. Racial Justice Now is 28 years old in November, and it was co-founded by my wife, Nakia Sankar Jabbar, and Professor Vanessa Randall in Dayton, Ohio in 2011. In response to out of school, the disparities around out of school suspensions. The Ohio has a 100% black boy suspension, out of school suspension rate for kindergartners. That was a statistic in 2014 done by the Schott Foundation that all the children suspended or expelled from kindergarten were all black boys. And so that's just indicative of the overall education society and how it is disciplining or using discipline to put our children in a pipeline to prison. And so, again, Racial Justice Now going on 8 years strong. I just wanted to read quickly our win list. And I think our win list kind of sums up the significance of the organization, a grassroots organization, which is in Dayton, Ohio, and is also in the DMV area. We started our D.C., Maryland, Virginia chapter last year. But restorative justice practice put in 10 schools, school building staff with full-time positive school climate teachers, all zero-tolerance language removed from student code of conduct, parents added to student code of conduct committee, and Dayton Public Schools Policy Committee released first ever State of Ohio School Discipline Report Card in Ohio, organized to get the third national and first in the state of Ohio Office of Mail of Color in Dayton Public Schools, won a local moratorium on all out-of-school suspensions for pre-K in Dayton Public Schools, changed the curriculum in Dayton Public Schools, adding a culturally relevant books as mandatory reading, specifically Booker T. Washington's Up for Slavery. Got successfully a governor signed bill HB 318 into law, a statewide ban on out-of-school suspensions for pre-K through third grade students in the state of Ohio. So that was a state win, again, by this grassroots organization, Racial Justice Now, 8 years old. And then the last thing I'll share, that the West Dayton Youth Task Force was successful in overturning a governor's decision to defund a statewide program for low-income youth summer employment. And so we, West Dayton Youth Task Force was successful in getting that decision overturned and those millions of dollars spent again back with our youth for summer job employment. And so that's just the introduction to the great work that this grassroots organization has done in our community in Dayton and also here in Maryland. And it's been a great opportunity and a pleasure to serve this organization.
Brother Jabbar.
Congratulations.
Are you and your wife educators, or is it just your wife, or who's the educator? If somebody is the educator in that union, who is it?
Well, you know, neither of us are actually trained educators from that standpoint. She was, you know, catapulted as a parent into the work. And ran into that great educator, Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu, or ran into his documentation and educated her and politicized her around what was going on, not only to her son, but all these other students across the state and nation as well. But I do come from a line of educators. My mother's a retired teacher. My grandmother's a retired teacher. My brother's a professor. And my great-grandfather, Bishop John Jameson Moore, in the late 1800s, started the first, they call it Negro school on the Pacific Coast in San Francisco. And so that was at ministry work. And so when we talk about school and education, you know, we have to look back at our education systems. Again, I mentioned Horace Mann, one of the founders or founding fathers or founding demons to found American education system. But we have to look at our founding fathers and what the education system looked like previous to us integrating, you know, with our oppressor. And my grandfather was a part of, you know, setting up through the church, AME Zion denomination, you know, connected to Paul Robeson, Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, Sojourner Truth and other abolitionist like work. But that partnership between the church and school, educating our children, you know, we did much better previous to our integration educationally, or the Brown versus Board decision. You know, we turned out a lot of doctors and lawyers and all other kind of professionals, you know. And so that's the education side.
Great.
Brother Jabbar, question in relation to the organization. Because you just touched on something that I want to ask a question about. I noticed in your synopsis you talked about fostering character development based on the seven principles. and to accomplish this by means of study, social and cultural activities, academic and career development, and community work. And the working on the front of trying to get some of these public schools to treat our students fairly is one work which you have, which you and the other folks in the organization have been doing. But some of the other work that you're speaking of in this paragraph I wrote will probably have to be accomplished outside of these formal education or formal public school system.
Absolutely.
You mentioned about your grandfather, your great-grandfather or your grandfather using the church to start education systems. I believe, and this is just me, I might be wrong, that we're going to have to, by knowing history, we're going to have to duplicate that again. And I'm not talking about based on some of this foolishness and shenanigans we see going on in these churches now, because the churches that we see now are not those churches that you described back then that your great-grandfather was a part of. But we're going to need independent organizations to start, whether it's Saturday schools, weekend after-school programs, community organizations, churches, temples, and mosques. Everybody's going to have to be all hands on deck in kind of turning this around. How do you see this, and how and what have you guys been doing in relation to this? Because you've probably been doing this already. But go ahead, I'll let you talk on it.
You know, the assistant in Richmond said something that we need to have, you know, parallel conversations around, you know, changing the public school system and having our own, you know, cultural education, whether it's Saturday school, Sunday school, or what have you. But, it really is primary. The necessity of teaching our own, educating our own. There's no other black national school system that I know of other than the Nation of Islam. And so looking at that as a template, you know, to start a school or Muhammad University, which they are, you have to start a Saturday school for a year. That's 52 weeks. And so by the time you run your Saturday school, you know, whether it's, you know, 10 to 2 on a Saturday, and every Saturday you worked out your volunteers, you worked out your curriculum, you work out your church that you're going to be at or the partners that you're going to align with, you worked out your budget, worked out your food, you know, you worked out the books and the children that are going to come. You got a base of children. And through that process, you're able to begin your own school. And okay. So as we transition into something new of our own education system, that is a model, you know, and to look at. And again, that's the only black national education system that I know of. If there's another, please fill me in. But looking at that as a model, that is an opportunity, as well as, like I said, reviving earlier what the SNCC and the Freedom Rides do. But to have that conversation on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning to talk about our culture. And I pointed out specifically Kwanzaa because we have to have, you know, some uniform code. We have to have some uniform symbols and words that we all recognize and can agree on.
Okay.
And so Kwanzaa is an excellent opportunity for that. It's not a holiday. It's a way of life, you know. And when we look at religion that way, people who say that they're Christians or they say that they're Muslims, they say that they're Jews, but they're not supposed to be on one day a week when you go to the that house or that brick building. It's supposed to be a way of life. And so Kwanzaa or the seven principles is a beautiful example, regardless of your religion. You know, faith is a principle. And so that's a great teaching tool, a great sharing tool. And I think it's excellent to bring into classrooms as far as your learning environment. And I've conducted cultural exchanges. And so I'm an international man. People say Pan-African is dead, and I say the ignorant. They need to be educated because I can go and dialogue in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I can educate the Indians on their culture better than they can educate me on theirs, or some of them, you know. But yeah. I bring to them Kwanzaa. I bring to them, you know, these ancient traditions of customs and us in ways and ceremonies, you know. And so it's a really a beautiful expression when you really lay it out and you attempt to use it as a tool to teach and extract all those keywords and all the principles that underlie it, and the relationship it develops for and the respect for the individual, the family unit, you know, the brother, the sister, the uncle, the cousin, you know, the neighbor, and then your extended community. It's really a beautiful expression.
Richard, when I spoke with Brother Jabbar last week, he was up in North Dakota, and I was saying, wait a minute, is there any blacks up there? the man is moving around. But go ahead, Richard. I didn't want to cut.
That's a great thing. You know, as I was looking at the website and the different things, one thing that struck me, well, it's two things that struck me, and I'm really commend you on you and the team actually, and with the successes that you have had. It was interesting to hear the high number of school disciplines at. Did I hear kindergarten? Was that kindergarten or first grade?
Kindergarten, yeah.
That's just something. But the culturally relevant curriculum. Here they had the DEOP conference, and education became a part of one of the panel's discussions. And the thing that struck me was, and I wanted to get your observation of what's going on in Ohio. Do black teachers, or are there a lot of black teachers within the educational system in Ohio?
And so also we're in Maryland. We started our DMV chapter in July of last year, or I think it was February of last year. But Ohio, like most of the education system, is, you know, dominated by white women that teach our children. And so that's just across America. And it really is. So people say we need more black teachers. And it's really a systemic issue, because they make these qualifications to get your teacher certification. You might say it's culturally biased. You may say black teachers have a hard time passing that test. For what reason? You know, I can't say I know the reasons, but I know that, you know, getting more black teachers in the classroom is not as simple as just hiring more.
I agree.
And in addition, because, you know, teachers are miseducated across the board. So just because you got a black face don't mean you don't have a colonized mind that you are sharing with our students.
Yes.
You know, but it really is dominated by white women, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that was the thing, and you know, the points that you just raised as far as being dominated by white women, and the difficulty of being able. And I was, you know, on a board for a brief time on a charter. I was African Center Charter School, and I not have a non-education background, but just gave me a window to see when you talk about actually. Getting the certifications needed, you know, and as you said, we couldn't figure out what was the bias or what the training, but it obviously was a problem. But as we move and talk about the, you know, just that this challenge, and more importantly, the challenge that the curriculum imposes on black children, you know, just by attending, and that's educators and, you know, just going through the educational process a bit, but also the children, because we there's discussion that it hurts us, not just what they do to us from a organizational, you know, administrative process, but just as Carter Woodson said, in Miseducation and the Negro, what that kind of information in relationship to black children, and which raises my question. I'm just wanting to spark dialogue about this. Do you know what came out of it, the thought came out of it? Are black teachers, or at least some black teachers amongst themselves, having a dialogue about the harm that the curriculum is doing to black children? I mean, they have to do their job and others. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they are.
They know. They know. And the teachers are, you know, I would say somewhat powerless. You know, back to the brother's point about independent, you know, political parties. you know, when you are confined and as a Democrat, you know, you have to toe the Democratic line, you know what I mean? And so, you know, a teacher here, she may not agree with the curriculum that a kindergartner has to sit on the mat for the first 2 hours of class, you know, but that's what she's judged on. That's what, you know, her evaluation is based on,
right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so they're, you know, slaves to a system, you know, quite honestly. And so there's ways to approach it, you know, if you have that, again, that cultural, historical understanding yourself, because many of them don't, and I'm not pointing fingers, you know, because we've all been miseducated under this system. Right. And so, you know, being a teacher is no easy task, man, you know, because, you know, it's not just what's taught, but it's how it's taught. You right. know, the learning style of a black boy, they say most of them are kinesthetic learners. How are kinesthetic learners represented and served in our American education system? They're not.
Right.
right. right. They're not. So the best way for you to learn is not in this classroom at all. But I expect you to perform at a certain level. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so
right.
it's not just what the information is, but it's how you're delivering it. You know, that our children are relational, they believe in, you know, associating, you know, within the curriculum to their lives. You know what I mean? Don't give me a math problem about sailboats. I don't have sailboats in my neighborhood. You know what I'm saying? Right. So, you know, all of these are factors. So just the information itself is one factor, but there are also others, you know, additional style, like I said, learning styles, associating with the teacher, the environment of the school in general, just being set up like a prison, and the mass moving of children and things, you know, I mean, even the letter grades, all of it. So this is, it's not our system, you know, it's really not. And we have to really accept that in a lot of ways.
As far as, you know, the point about, you know, being historically grounded in our, you know, what we've done, right? Because, as you said, and Elliot said, you know, we created, utilizing the churches, I mean, let's go back to the 1900s, you know, educational systems. But when when we look at even after the Civil War and going into, say, the 20s and 30s, well, when they were segregated schools, Black teachers were able to incorporate that cultural information in the classrooms. And that's again, before they switched it, right? And they moved Black teachers out of school and moved white teachers in. So that's why I'm interested in about how much teachers understand that our approaches in dealing with this political, being politically oppressed, we've created strategies and tactics to deal with that. Even though it seems like it's more intense now, but it couldn't have been more intense than other periods. But I think we're not as grounded in our own history and in the education, using the educational system for that, which raises another question, you know, and I'm just, again, for dialogue purposes, let's see your observation, because I'm wondering about homeschooling. Because I'm always thinking of how do we organize, right? Who do we go to? How did CB in the 60s create and it was national at that time, the independent educational movement, and did it come out of SNCC and what are the lessons? So when do you see any culturally relevant homeschooling taking place as you move between Maryland and Ohio, as far as parents recognizing they have to put education in their own hands?
Absolutely. No, there are great homeschooling collectives, homeschoolers, you know, some online independent education going on, definitely. But, you know, it happens in pockets. Some are... areas are more progressive, you know, D.C. and Atlanta. There's two Pan-African charter schools in Philadelphia. You know, so there's things happening in pockets. But, mm-hmm. you know, the masses of our children are certainly, you know, right. suffering And it's a challenge because there's the economic system attached to homeschooling. You know, how does that parent, you know, one or two, you know, not work all day and manage that? You know, oftentimes we don't have our own land, whereas as we're, you know, somewhere paying a rent or paying mortgage and things of that nature. So it's really a challenge to organize that. But there is certainly homeschooling collectives that bring, like the Sankofa Homeschooling Collective here in the D.C. area, where they come together on a Friday, you know, and are able to share class times and class space, and everybody, you know, can do their individual thing, or, you know, or cluster those that have children around the same age throughout the week. And again, on Friday, come to, you know, one prime location. And so, Aya Institute online in Atlanta, Stone Mountain, Georgia. You know, he got students from Baba Wakesa Madzimoyo and his wife, Fia Madzimoyo. The Aya Institute is great. So they got students from all over the country, from middle school and up through high school. They have they all come together at the end of the year for a community graduation. You know, the community has to actually give permission for the students to graduate. They have to stand up and give oral presentations and actually be accepted by community members. And so a lot of great things happening around the country. Not enough of it, but we have to start from somewhere.
Oh yeah, and that's what I guess I'm looking at, because, you know, when you look at those different, I guess it's principles, whether it be cooperation, collaboration, or co-creation, just looking at it is these all clusters that, you know, as we strengthen our own internal, in Philadelphia, they do have, I think it's freedom schools during the summer. And then right. Sankofa Academy, you know, I know that they're just, you know, matter of fact, one of my nieces go to Sankofa Academy, and then, you know, and they're participating in freedom schools in the summertime. So as you said, and I'm just wondering, will those small, because when you mentioned about the Nation of Islam having a national network, in a way, these small clusters become national in the sense that they're all over, but they're not. We're not necessarily coordinated as at one time in the past. And I'm just wondering, do you see that possibly ever happening using some mechanism like CB? At one point, CB, the Council for Independent Institutions. Because I think they had a very active and bona fide science program at one time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's the effort. Yeah, it's certainly the effort is out there. And I think the way that this president is pushing things, that he helps those efforts, you know, that we understand mm-hmm. that we still need to make some changes in our communities. But yeah, it's definitely not easy to do, and it's no white foundation is cutting a check to support that, you know, and so you know, we have to figure out the economic components of how, you know, those that do business and our business professionals and how that relates to community development, you know, putting our profits and our dollars and controlling our inner markets and external markets so that we have better circulation of our dollars and better support of our own institutions.
That was one reason that comes back to, you know, Elliot, that comes for me, it comes back to the politics of it, because I just think that, especially in places where we still have large numbers, and you know, if we were able to truly take control, and I don't look at it as far as the educational system more than the educational budget. If we truly took control of the educational budget and those departments that the budget feeds into, then possibly we can reshape No, the system is going to be it is. It's not. I'm not one of them that you can transform it or any of that. But the critical question you raise, and you raised it twice in relationship to reparations and also in education, how do we, and I think you put it, the need for economic benefit, because people have to look at their personal lives. How are they going to live? And if there is no economic benefit, they have to make a critical decision of what they have to do in order to make a living. And that decision has to be political, it seems to me, for right now, because until we can, you know, raise the skill level and the competitive level of the students we develop. So we need to politically take control of the educational system. And that has to be a strategic and tactical mechanism. But I don't see any way we can. We don't have enough wealth. We don't have enough income in order to do it. So we have to use the electoral process in order to take control of the budgets of these educational systems. Therefore, even to some degree, the regulation. That's the way I'm thinking. I may be wrong in that, but that's the only way I can see them deal with that conundrum.
We say it's more than one way to skin a cat. You know, we have to approach this difficult problem that we have with all of the options possible on the table. Absolutely.
You know, I think it's important also that that organizations like this, and I commend you and your wife for forming that, because we need to put safeguards and protect our children when they're in these spaces. Some of our people want to send their children to predominantly white schools because in their mind they feel as though they get a better education. But in any of these environments, they need protection. Let me read two articles to kind of reinforce what I'm saying in relation to something I want to mentioned, Brother Jabbar. And this came from two published reports. One of them was from a couple of days ago, October the 10th. It says, the title of it, "There's No Malice Intended. Superintendent Downplays the Assistant Principal Calling a Student a Nigger." Just the other day, just another day in America, an assistant principal called a 9-year-old child the N-word and was not reprimanded. The parents are out.
Where was it at?
This was in Sanford, Maine. The parents are outraged. WSA reporter reports the child's name, the child's home school. The child came home from school, in Sanford, Maine, and said he was called the N-word by the assistant principal. The child's father, Neil Jarrett, immediately had a meeting with the school, and he explained, she said, "Yes, I know." The teacher said, "Yes, I know I'm wrong. I did call your son a nigger. And I wasn't thinking about the consequences at the time or what it would do to your child." The child was sent to the principal's office for allegedly bullying. And the assistant principal said, "If I called you a nigger, how would you feel?" Jared told the reporter there's no way that would cross her mind if she really wasn't looking at him in that fashion. Disturbingly, Matthew Nelson, the superintendent, is defending the assistant principal. "We're trying to make an example, and we fail in terms of being able to do that. But there's no malice intended. It wasn't intentional in terms of that." The assistant principal's punishment? Additional training, according to the school. Jarrett reacted angrily and said they're just going to brush this off and keep it the way it has been. In a couple of years down the line, the same thing is going to happen to someone else's kid. Now,
just another day in America.
Now let me read this other one. Now, this is from Wendell, North Carolina, thousands of miles away. A black student at the North Carolina high school infiltrated and exposed a racist student online chat room, and it's unclear if anyone in the chat is facing consequences. The News and Observer reports 14-year-old Shakina Edwards uncovered slur-laden conversations about killing black people and reviving slavery. The chat involved students at Edward East Wake High School and five other schools in the Johnson County Corinth High School District. Edwards and her family says that East Wake High's principal, Stacy Alston, told them he's not disciplining anyone. County school officials on Thursday said that federal student privacy laws prevent them from saying if disciplinary action was taken. In the past, district officials have revealed when students were disciplined for racist behavior. So we see two incidents where our children are verbally abused in these schools, and the leadership of the school said there's nothing going to be done. So I'm saying that in relation to the organization that you formed, and it is another chapter in Washington now. Hopefully, maybe some of these parents will reach out and form chapters in their communities, because we need organized protection for our children when they're in these schools. It's plainly obvious to me.
Now, and, you know, on another protection, I want to share something that we've been working on recently. We know white children do go up in schools and shoot it up, and you know, had these mass shootings and that we saw in Florida, we saw in Connecticut, and in Colorado, and this is how they get down, right? This is their culture and history. And so the challenge, though, is what happens is there's always a disproportionate response to what happens in our community. So we don't have the same problems of inner city schools or mass shootings. Those things happen in the suburbs.
Okay.
Yes. And so they have there's been a big issue around what they call, you know, school security now, school safety. And so they've ramped up these huge budgets to do what I consider a stimulus package to poor whites. And right. Now they're going to over police us in schools. And so they're going to give buy more metal detectors, right? Who's going to benefit from those that are selling those, right? And then they're going to hire more people to be in, you know, SROs in our schools. But they have this new thing called a behavioral threat assessment. And this is happening all over the country. And what they're going to do is they're going to have this SRO, which is actually a school resource officer that's trained by the police. They're considered a special police. And they have arresting rights. You'll see them all over the country, particularly in Chicago. But they're going to be partnering with the teacher to designate students that are designated as a, quote, threat. And so, you know, we know, again, that the demographic of those who are mass shooters are all white males. And so, but they're going to go throughout all the schools and based upon whatever kind of standard they decide to come up with, to deem somebody a threat. I don't know if it's going to be a yellow or orange or red or blue, or if it's a 1 or a 10 or something of that nature. But again, we're facing this very dangerous proposition now, where we're giving increased power to police who can go into a public school and question your child without the parent being present.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that happens all over the country. And so we consistently see these pipeline to prison activities. You know, there's proof of judges being paid off to give heavy sentences to juveniles to get them into the systems. And so all of these
we've seen that in Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
exactly. All of these dangerous factors to continually not only miseducate us, but put us in a pipeline to jail. So it's, you know, from the school system. And then we have to ask that question with these behavioral threat assessments. Now, who is that information going to be shared with? You say this child is a 3 or this child is a 7. Are they going to tell that to the sheriff? Are they going to tell that to the county police? Are they going to share that with this government agency or that government? Are they going to share it with ICE? Are they going to share it with the FBI? Are we going to be driving down the street and somebody pull us up in the car and say that your child is considered a threat? You all need to get out, you know? And so we're learning that data is more valuable than oil. And so who's this data going to be shared with? So these things are very dangerous. They're being passed down as laws across the country. Maryland just adopted it. They quadrupled the budget for safety and security. Again, so these are the slave catchers, that
right.
wealthier white man giving a stimulus package to the lower class white so they don't rebel against them, but instead they over-police us. You know,
and it's so interesting because it all brings this up. But as you're saying that, well, it's two things coming. I don't know if I got it right. When you said about going to Germany and learning from the German system, because it becomes this whole militarization, right? Of, or, you know, and here And Germany really learned it from here, just like South Africa learned it from here, as far as how do you control the people. But the other thing is that this whole thing of, you would think that that's more important to Black constituents, because that's a political thing, as you mentioned, you know. But I haven't heard no Black, well, I haven't heard the local Black congresspersons or mention anything about what you just said as far as this SRO or school resource officer, right? Is that, I haven't heard anything about that.
You have, I've heard talk about that here in Pennsylvania, Richard.
Oh, yeah. This is the first time I heard.
Okay.
That's why I'm on.
Yeah, that school safety is pretty big with, again, with those mass shootings following up. And then, of course, Betsy DeVos being the individual that she is as far as the Secretary of State. And, you know, these the hearings that they had with these school safety shootings, they would do things like call the hearing the same day, or it'd be like 24 hours. You know, we're going to call a hearing on the school, a national school of safety security hearing, and if anybody wants to testify, you know, they have all of like 24 hours to respond, you know. So it's been very ill-handled, very treacherous, scheming kind of behavior around the whole incident. And like I said, we're watching the tricks of the trade of politics and how all this big money is involved, huge money and dollars involved in education. I didn't realize it myself until I was actually told that the Dayton public school system had a bigger budget than the city of Dayton.
Mm.
You know, right. So that really put things in perspective, you know, for me.
Here, I think I was in that Philadelphia's school budget was $1 billion, and somebody told me, you know, that it's $2 billion, you know. And you know, that's why it just, you know, it seems that our attack focus, especially when we're talking about, you know, from the political perspective and the local perspective and organized to get control over those dollars, because those dollars fund so many things, as you laid out. You know, not only the school gets that money, but as you said, the person who's putting those detectors in, and other resources that has to be services, good services that have to be purchased coming out of those buckets. And if we're nowhere near them, somebody's making decisions about what companies are being used and how they're being used and how much they're getting for. So it's economy that we should be controlled over, especially when we're over 50% in some areas of the school system. You know, we definitely should be control over
them. I see you got another host there with you, Brother Jabbar.
No, yeah. So yeah, we're always learning. These are some of, you know, these children are some of the best teachers. And so we're always learning from them and having to evolve. You know, we can't negate the modern technology effects on these children. You know, sometimes your grandmother will be so impressed that this child knows how to use a phone, you know, at, you know, 3 years old or what have you. But that's really, you know, a new standard today. And so this wave of technology that's affecting these children is significant. I mean, the media that they're feeding on, you know, how positive is it for their development, you know, and what are they being programmed to think is good and positive, and what are they being programmed to think is less than positive? You know, what is their self-image that's being shaped through these this new media? And all of this is huge effects in the education system. You know, the textbooks, you got to keep in mind that textbooks are, or textbook companies, there's only five across the nation that fulfill all of the school districts across the country. And so who are these five companies, right? And what is their perspective on our community, you know? And they say, no, you know how white people are. They say, no, I have a black friend. I love black people. You know, they say, no, I have black people in the book, you know? And so what are they telling our children about slavery? You know, what are these outside entities? And so, you know, Dayton Public Schools spent $900,000 $900,000 on books.
Right.
You know, nearly $1 million on books that will tell half truth and whole lies. You know, so you know, yeah, it's not only again what you teach, but how you teach. So there's a lot of layers to it. Really, a lot of layers that you know, trying to get children more involved in laptops and learning on the computer. But that's not necessarily our learning style. You know, just quite frankly, that's just not necessarily our learning style. And so these things become increasingly problematic for our children, you know.
Brother Jabbar, before I let you go and give all the information how people can join both organizations, question, because I know that the organization deals primarily with education and injustices in different educational venues. But just curious, being that the chapter started in Ohio, when Tamir Rice was gunned down by those cops in the park, and the young man was killed in Walmart, did the parents reach out to the organization in any way? I'm just curious.
So,
I mean, that was in Cleveland. That wasn't in
Tamir Rice was up in Cleveland.
Cleveland, yeah.
And yeah, so that was not necessarily reaching out for assistance.
Okay.
But, you know, when it happened, we were very. What other organizers? And so, we were definitely in contact with other organizers. But then when our brother in Beaver Creek was shot, we were. More involved there. That's adjacent county.
Okay.
And so John Crawford II.
Yes. Yeah, that was in the Walmart.
And so when that happened,
I think we're starting to lose Brother Jabbar. Brother Jabbar, you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, I think we're starting to lose you. Listen, before we wind up tonight, I want you to give out the contacts, how people can reach you, can join the organizations, anything you want to give us, the floor is yours.
Excellent. So, we're at the NCOBRA online, NCOBRAonline.org. You can become a member. You can join the Youth Commission and get more information on the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America at NCOBRAonline.org. Racial Justice Now has two chapters in the Dayton, Ohio area, as well as in the DMV or DC, Maryland, and Virginia area. And our two websites are rjnohio.org, that's rjnohio.org, as well as rjndmv.org, rjndmv.org. And you can find us on Facebook, Racial Justice Now. You can find us on Twitter at Racial Justice Now, also Instagram. On Racial Justice Now, you can sign up for our newsletter and get more information about the work that we do to end the school-to-prison pipeline and to end anti-black institutional and systemic racism.
Yeah, I signed up for the newsletter, but listen, the phone line is always open. Anytime you want to come and give us updates, kick around some issues, you can always reach out. I'll be in touch with you, though.
No, that's greatly appreciated, man. Thank you so much for having this opportunity. Bless you, you brothers and the show for great success. And I was great to hear that the sponsors running through. And I pray that you get increased sponsors, increased sponsorship, and increased listenership. And so bless you, brothers, for your work around independent media, raising the consciousness of our people. And it's severely needed. And I pray that you all have great success, continued success on the show.
We'll talk soon.
Peace.
All right.
Peace now.
Richard?
Yes.
Listen, before we go, Richard, give me about 10 minutes. I want to, what I brought up Friday, that article, I'm just curious. Did you mention it to anybody or talk with anybody to see whether they were aware?
Nobody mentioned it.
I did a little impromptu poll. Saturday was kind of a busy day, and a lot of customers I know watch that network because they talk about And to a man, none of them were aware of that incident that went on with the CEO of that network, of that word network, sending out racist tweets, Instagramming racist photos. And then when he was confronted by some of the black ministers, and I'm not trying to stand up for those guys because some of them guys are charlatans to me. That's just how I look at them. But when they tried to confront him about what he was doing, he basically told them to kick rocks. You remember when I read that article?
Yeah. And I seen the image too.
And I'm just curious to how many churches this past Sunday brought that up in their announcements, whether their congregation were aware of it, whether they signed this petition,
right?
Whether they dropped that thing from their cable subscription. Let me read this little thing here I pulled down. The Word Network is the largest African-American religious network in the world. It was founded in February 2000 by Kevin Adell, that's the guy in that article, who also owns 910 AM Superstation, a local urban talk radio station. I don't know what they're talking about. I'm curious. I'll find out. And WADL TV 38, a television network serving the Detroit television market and the Word Network. The Word Network reaches nearly 93 million homes in the U.S. alone through DirecTV, Comcast, Time Warner, Bright House Cable, Cox Cable, Cablevision, Charter, and a host of other cable operators, and 9 million homes on Sky TV in the U.K. The Word Network offers a variety of ministries, including T.D. Jakes, Bishop Charles Ellis III, Bishop Noel Jones, Pastor R.A. Vernon, Paula White, Benny Hinn, Joseph Prince. Word Network recognizes that music is a large part of the black Christian experience and offers a stellar lineup of gospel artists, including Marvin Sapp, Kirk Franklin, Murray Mary, Donnie Kirk McKirken, Hezekiah Walker, C.C. Winans, just to name a few. The Watch Night Services with Dr. E. Dewey Smith, Seven Last Words with Dr. Jamal Bryant, Strategy Conferences with Bishop I.V. Hilliard, and Full Gospel Baptist Church Fellowship International Conference in Atlanta, Georgia. Through the years, the Word Network has not only broadcast live conferences, but also participated in sponsorship. They sponsor Steve Harvey's Hoodie Awards, the Merge Summit from Los Angeles, I Hear Music in Cincinnati, Ohio, and the Donnie McKirken Perfect Music Conference. In addition, the Word Network has hosted telethons featuring Juanita Bynum, George Boomer, and Jamal Bryant. Now, this guy, George Boomer, was the guy that confronted the guy, Adell, about these tweets, and he did a characterization of him, calling him Tattoo, and he was, you remember when
so
you see all of this stuff here, and you know, when we were talking about our people having the power, you know, in church, they have church on Sunday, and then some of our people come home and have church because they watch this network and they watch all this stuff. I just named all these people that's on here. This guy boasts having all these black people on here, but call them his hoes. And I'm not saying it. He said it. He called them that. Black people need to cut that crap off. All these, listen, black people that watch cable television, they got DirecTV, they got Comcast, the Bright House, Cablevision, Cox, they need to find out and drop that channel. They probably ain't going to drop cable. I ain't advising nobody to drop no cable. They probably want to watch other shows or want to watch the news. But you don't have to have that station on your subscription. Drop it. They need to drop it. I mean, that's why people do this to black people. They figure you ain't going to do nothing about it. This guy done insulted black people. Some of these black folks watch that stuff. They really think they're getting closer to God watching these networks and hearing these poverty pimps I don't want to say that, hearing these ministers on here preaching. And this guy that runs the network is making jokes about your pastors, calling them his hoes. And he's standing up there with a pimp coat on, look like in from the 70s, and a big furry hat, saying that he's the pimp and they're the hoes, and pictures of all of them. And insulted the one guy at least on three occasions. He got the nerve to put it in print what the guy said to him, which is an insulting in itself, and then left the network. He supposedly left the network. I don't know whether he's going to stay left or he's going to get back later on because there's money involved. But he's the one that started this online petition to get black people to boycott the network. In this respect, I agree with him. Black folks need to drop that the word network from their subscription. You already go to church on Sunday. You don't need to watch that crap. Watch another station. Go to some gospel shows at your church. Listen to the performers. Or wait till some of these performers come to your town if you want to see them. Don't support this guy. Don't be a fool. This guy looking at black people as fools. He figured you ain't going to do nothing about it. If he thought you were going to do something about it, he wouldn't have. He not only tweeted that image once, Richard, he tweeted it three times. You saw it.
Yeah.
I just figured I'd read that because, you know, I just thought it was strange. Now, I'll wait because Saturday, you know, when I mentioned it to several customers, none of them was even aware of it. Now, next week, when I get a chance to see some of them, I want to ask them whether it was talked about in their church on Sunday.
Church, right, right.
And I hate to say it won't be, you know, I won't be surprised with the answer. You know, I'll be surprised if any of them talked about it. And they probably went home after church and turned that stuff on and watched Bobby Jones or whoever be on that. I don't know who's on that station. But some of our listeners probably watch it themselves. But if you don't, you see who's on there. All the popular people, all the popular ministers, Jamal Bryant, Donnie McKirkin, Bishop D.D. Jakes, and all of them. They all on there. How many of them going to say something about this guy calling them hoes? Yeah, well, Richard, you know, the struggle continues. That's all I got to say.
It's definitely that.
Before we leave this evening, I want to give the lineup again. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Oshie from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Always interesting discussion and dialogue. And again, I was happy to see Brother Oshie and Brother Jeff came up for the Locks Conference and hung out. And then we had breakfast and they traveled back. And so it was good to see those men.
I had a book which where you give your birth date, give the day and the name that you were born on. I mean, from the day you get the name. And I never really thought about, you know, I know, you know, you got to always give your birthday and month and year, but I never realized what, you know, that was a new piece of information. So I really appreciate, you know, sharing with him.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to, because he kind of caught me when I was dismantling a lot of stuff and he was mentioning it to me, but I'm going to get back to him because it was kind of interesting what he was saying. I've never had anybody.
And it turned out your brother and your niece were born on the same day.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, his daughter and I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow, and I should know it. It's my own brother. I hope he ain't listening. Oh, man. Well, boy, I shouldn't have said that on air.
But it's just, you know, these little pieces of information that, you know, you get, but and what it's associated, and I think it made it so culturally relevant is just that, you know, well, one, like you said, you know, it's good to see these brothers were willing to, you know, come up and whatever, and this is not the first time, but how we do this networking with each other and expand each other knowledge base. But just the ideal of learning something new, you know, which is what we hope to do in this Time for Awakening and the media and program. So Brother OC is, you know, in this program, you know, doing this thing. And really enjoyed it. And they enjoyed the 2 days here too.
Yeah. Yeah. I just saw them moving around. And every time I look, I seen OC hugging a different woman. I said, well, I thought he knew him.
yeah, he was right. Get right with him. Yeah.
Hey, listen, you got 5 minutes?
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's go to 646. 646?
Hey, what's happening, Richard and Elliot? Right quick, man. I had just came in and turned you on. And what pork chop chicken are you talking about?
No, the Word Network, the owner, the CEO, not somebody that work in the mailroom or not an employee, the CEO, the owner of the network, tweeted out some, let me read this for, because evidently you didn't hear it. Did you know?
No.
Well, let me read it for some of the audience that might not be aware. Because it's sad, it's strange when you read it, but it's sad that some of our people, that the disrespect that these people show to some of our people. Now, I'm not, like I said before, I'm not trying to protect these guys because these guys are a bunch of charlatans anyway. But look at this exchange here. Now, this came from a published report on the 10th, which is your Thursday. Racist Word TV station slammed over pimp and black clergy as hoes pictured. It says over 100 black clergy are joining forces to protest the racially insensitive environment at the Word Network, a Christian TV station that sells itself as the world's largest African-American religious network that reaches 93 million homes in the U.S. The station is owned by Kevin Adell, a white man, and pastors claim that he has a history of outright racist actions. His biggest move came on September 19th, 2019, when he sent a text message with a photo of himself dressed like a pimp surrounded by black clergymen he deemed as his hoes. This incident ignited a boycott against the Word Network kicked off on change.org. The preachers around the country have signed up, well, it says preachers around the country, I don't know who, have signed up to support the boycott. Included Bishop George G. Bloomer, who is one of the preachers featured most prominently in Adele's pimp photo. All the clergy are planning protests in Michigan and others targeted locations throughout the country. Archbishop Bernard Jordan of Zoe Ministries, Pastor Deborah Jordan, Pastor Larry Reed, Vicky Yoey, Christian Recordings. I don't know who these people are. I'll just read a few of these names. Or just a few of the 100 preachers joining the boycott. Adell claims he didn't create the racist pimp image. However, he didn't protest its circulation. In fact, he texted to various staff, and many of whom were black, including Bishop Bloomer. In the Change.org petition, it laid out that Bishop Bloomer tried to tell Adell, "This is not funny. This is not good. This pimp hoe talk has racist connotations for black people." However, Adell texts Bishop Bloomer writing, "It's funny to me, so you get over it." At one point, Adell even went further by photoshopping a picture of Bishop Bloomer in a white tuxedo, and below his photo, he typed the text, "The photo last night was good. Tattoo, the dwarf in the 1977 show Fantasy Island, who went around calling Mr. Rourke boss." In other words, Adell was calling Bishop Bloomer his tattoo while he's boss. The last straw came when Bishop Bloomer texted Adell again saying, "This is not good. I don't know what you're doing, but stop playing." Adell responded, "Oh, you're too sensitive." Bishop Bloomer tried to explain that Adell was what he was doing was similar to a white man wearing blackface. Bishop Bloomer again told Adele, once again, get rid of this. Stop playing with this. Adele then texts Bishop Bloomer a picture of himself in a white tuxedo standing next to a friend, both wearing blackface and white tuxedos. Suddenly, with a using a Sharpie, he blacked out the face of his friend, thus producing blackface. Bishop Bloomer ended up leaving the Word Network after that, after this. And now he and other clergy are demanding Adele publicly apologize to Bloomer and the black community, and also demanded the cable companies drop the Word Network from their package. So that's what has went on. This guy, the CEO, has been Instagramming, sending out all these photographs of popular black ministers as hoes, and he's the pimp. So evidently he don't care. He told this guy.
But that sounds about right, though. I mean,
well, no, I'm not dealing with the fact of it's right or wrong.
For being honest.
Well, no, I'm not even dealing with that fact. I'm dealing with the fact that this guy just totally he's in 93 million black homes. You probably got relatives. We all got relatives that watch that crap, that station. They need to cut that crap off. Call their cable companies tomorrow and say, I don't want this Word Network. Not to necessarily help those ministers.
It's not like that.
Well, who?
It's not like that. You just can't remove one station from your package. You have to remove the package. I mean,
well,
the
they,
whole thing is he blatantly has no respect for black people.
Exactly.
I mean, that's quite evident.
And that's who he's making his money from.
Yeah, and but you got to understand, them pork chop chicken eaters don't have no respect for themselves. So that's why they would allow him to get away with that type of foolishness. You know what I mean? Because it makes absolutely no sense, like you're saying, to even participate in that sickness. Because that's some of the most blatant disrespect that I have heard in a long time.
I know.
I haven't heard that type of disrespect.
I mean, from the CEO.
No one expected from a pork chop chicken eater.
This guy's the CEO and tweeting all that stuff out and basically telling all of them to get over it. I want.
Somebody needs to really, really address and deal with him and his blatant disrespect, because That's what you call other madness. That's madness, dear man.
Yeah.
I was shocked by it. That's why I had called, because I was totally shocked by it. Because I had never heard any type of foolishness and shenanigans like that ever. That's crazy. So what he's basically saying is, in all truthfulness, that he can do whatever he wishes to do to black people.
Yeah.
And say whatever he wishes
to say
to black people, because it seems like the ministers with that purchase from them are not going to say anything to them. So that just goes to show the absolutely craziness of it.
And the thing is, now the thing is, several of those ministers that I named, I assume they have mega churches. Now, it said that as of Friday or Saturday, 3,000 people have signed a petition. Now, I would assume that in one of those guys' churches, he got more than 3,000 members. Even his members ain't even giving up this. Man, I'm telling you, come on. Our people need to stop being fools.
What should happen is that the congregation should demand that the church leaves the network, that they no longer will be on the network because of this guy's shenanigans. That's what should happen. Now, it doesn't seem to me that that's what's gonna happen, which is kind of crazy if you think about it, because the guy is blatantly a disrespectful individual. But you know, in all truthfulness, he makes good money. They make a lot of money with that, with that, what you call them.
No, certainly.
Yeah, they They make more money than one would imagine doing what they're doing. You know, and it seems like he has the support of whoever it is he has, because that to me is kind of crazy, man. That's real foul too, man. That's really, really foul. But I mean, that's the type of unfortunately, man, to say this, that's the type of treatment that we get when we deal with institutions like that, man. You know, those institutions have no type of respect for us and our culture. And they basically say whatever they deem they wish to say in regards to how they respond to us and all of that. So, I mean, you know, a petition is a beautiful thing if it's used properly and what needs to be done is done. But, you know, sometimes we have to be honest and we just have to call it as we see it. History has shown us that these individuals are not going to do anything to rectify and address the blatant disrespect of this charlatan.
Well, listen, do me a favor before when next time you call, in between that time, call around to maybe some family members you know, avid churchgoers, or even Watch That Network, and see if they are aware of that. Just I'm just curious, and we'll talk soon.
The pork chop chicken eaters, my family may be aware of it, but that's not going to stop them from supporting Word. That's the Word Channel. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, sorry to say it, Brother Elliot, most people aren't supporters of Word. They live by the Word Channel. They really do.
Well, you know.
So that's something that you know, you're not going to find, in all honesty, no real support of people saying that they're going to boycott the Word. That's just not something that's going to be done because it's too much support. You know, but I would hope that it would be dealt with on the level that it should be. But look, I got to run. I just wasn't clear on who you were talking about, but it's crazy, man.
But we'll talk.
But look, keep up the good work, and I'm grateful that, Elliot, you're speaking about it. I would love to hear your boy, Roland Martin, talk about it or someone else.
Well, he
you
might.
You know what I mean? But thank goodness you're able to report on it and speak about it. And listen, y'all have a good night. All
peace.
Right, Richard and Elliot?
Right.
Good, brother.
Right. Talk to
all
you.
All right, peace.
Yeah, Richard, oh, let me finish up. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Brother Ushi, on African Perspectives. Always interesting dialogue on African Perspectives with Brother Ushi. After Brother Ushi, from 1 to 3, Black People's Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones. And from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And from 8 to 9, the new season of Let's Buy Black hasn't started yet. So hold off on that. She'll be starting that second season very soon. But from 9 to 10, Incobra's program has become a weekly program now. So conversation reparations is not just the first Monday and third Monday. It's every Monday from 9 to 10 on Time for An Awakening Media. And from 10 to 12, Night Talk, the Roland Martin podcast is every day, Monday through Friday. On Tuesday, from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesday, from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC. On Thursday, from 7 to 8, Relationships with Joy and Troy. And then Friday, Time for An Awakening is back from 8 to 10 on Time for An Awakening Media. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. A lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon. Or you're watching your children playing after school. They seem to be so unaware. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of.
To save the children.